And on this Wednesday, of course, talk to the experts from Brandt Consolidated. And, well, today, actually, we will go back to an interview that we were able to do at Brandt's Agronomy Day. That was earlier there in August. And, well, once they got done with the field tours, went back in and to the main building there. And, well, one of the speakers that they had, well, the original speaker was unable to attend, but the one they had, Dr. Bill Simmons. He's a professor emeritus over at the University of Illinois. And, of course, they were talking a lot about, or the intent was, about carbon sequestering and what it means. But we began then our interview with Dr. Bill Simmons about, well, we understood his background at the University of Illinois predominantly was with being in the soil science side of the equation.
I would say soils and cropping systems and some of the various things that go on with our fertilizer elements and also with carbon cycling through these different cropping systems based on the type of tillage we do and what sort of crop rotation we have.
And, of course, that was a focus. So much attention now. That's the big buzzwords. Every generation, it seems like we have one. Carbon sequestering. Is it going to be applicable, you think, for most farms in Illinois?
That's a great question. I think it will be applicable for some people, for sure. There are some people that can upgrade their practices a little bit and get some of this carbon credit thing going. Probably not for everybody, but where a person can use less tillage, a person can grow a cover crop, these are all opportunities for people that they should look at.
I think most conceptions have been, or perceptions I should say, have been that in order to qualify you're going to have to be a continuous no-till for years and years and years. Is that a right perception?
Well, of course, that would be one way to do it, but I think there's a lot of other things that can be looked at on just reducing tillage and going with certain crop rotations and using cover crops.
So with that, can we determine then, like, say, if here in Illinois, a lot of times you get a wet fall, you get compaction, people want to go out, some of your colleagues at the University of Illinois, like Dr. Knopf, have talked about compaction and its impacts. If you went in and tilled it every 5 years, does that really lose a lot of the carbon that you would have sequestered the previous four?
Good question. I think a lot of it depends on the type of tillage you're doing. If it's deep tillage with a ripper, then you're not really incorporating as much of the residue. Vertical tillage is another tool that doesn't bury as much, leaves more of that residue on the surface. So there's a number of different options that can be looked at in that area.
Do we know at this point which crops, I mean, here we predominantly grow corn and soybeans, sequester the most carbon, and is it perceivable that at some point, if you grow soybeans this year, you're going to get X amount and so much the next year if you grow corn?
Yeah, I would say obviously the corn crop is going to have the most residue left behind after harvest. It's totally proportional to the amount of yields you get, and there are, you know, tons of residue with a high carbon nitrogen ratio, which is going to slow down the decomposition of that.
So as a soil scientist, and how does this corn plant above the ground photosynthesize energy, draw in the carbon to grow, to produce, and then transform it down into the roots and then expel it out into the soil?
Yeah, there's some of that obviously in the root level, but most of the carbon that the corn plant is going to sequester that doesn't leave with the grain wagon is going to be above ground residue. All that stover that's left comes out of the back end of the combine.
So then the carbon would not be actually incorporated into the soil, it would just be in the residue?
Correct. You would have a lot of that carbon laying there, and depending on what kind of tillage system, it could be very slow to break down, and that would be a sequestration of carbon.
And that makes me think, I guess one of the pitfalls as I think about it, of course, as was been mentioned, we know that the hypoxia, we have the nitrogen issue, we have the phosphorus issue, but a few years ago at Chesapeake Bay, some of the environmental EPA people were saying, we're seeing more runoff of phosphorus as it breaks down from that no-till residue getting into the streams. Would we see the same with carbon?
That's a good one. Well, carbon is not really going to leave over land, you know, unless it's actual the residue going down the river. But carbon is different. The phosphorus they're talking about was in some kind of elemental form, which could be dissolved phosphorus that could go with the water. So as long as the residue itself is not leaving the field, there's very little carbon that would be going out with that water.
And are there other crops that could be adapted that eventually maybe the payments for carbon sequestering would make it more lucrative to grow? So I think number one is timber, number two is grassland, followed by cropping. Do you foresee the possibility of the economics that we would be better off not growing corn or soybeans?
Well, that's a great question, too. And, of course, with the CRP program that we're all familiar with that's been around for years, that's a way that you're going to sequester carbon. But the money, in my opinion, the money is not there to support that as a practice. It's not going to completely replace the cost of your grain production.
Another issue that I know a lot of farmers are contemplating when they look at this is, in certain instances, weed control in no-till situations becomes a bigger issue as well.
That's correct. And when you switch tillage systems, you typically get a different suite of weeds that you're dealing with. And so a no-till system favors some of the small-seeded broadleafs and grasses that can germinate from a very shallow area. And back in the 50s and 60s, we used a lot of moldboard. Only the large-seeded broadleafs would have an excellent chance to germinate because they were buried.
And there again, as we think about no-till, some of the people said, how do you apply nitrogen? How do you get the nitrogen in there if you don't knife it in, and how you prevent it from leaving the soil?
Yeah, that's another part of the whole strategy and a part of the system that you're working with. A lot of times people will use a urease inhibitor with surface-applied urea, and that would give it enough time so that the rain would work it in. But yeah, there are management considerations for nitrogen when you go to no-till.
So where do you see this going? I mean, how many people do you think will adopt it?
That's a good question, and I think obviously we can't ignore the fact that there's some political overtones to some of this. It's going to depend a little bit the direction our country takes politically and whether people are, the government decides to engage more fully in, trying to sequester carbon. So that a lot of that's driven by political activity.
Can 180 million acres of corn and soybeans sequester the amount of carbon that's still being used from and put into the air from fossil fuels?
Not sure about that. I'd have to do the math on that one.
So obviously, will we? Because right now, I know some of the seed companies are trying to breed and at the presentation here a shorter stature corn. Not as much above ground. Will that reduce the amount of carbon that corn plant can sequester?
Really depends on the biomass and the yield that comes off of those. So the stover and the grain are somewhat equivalent in terms of their total weight. So depending on if these are high-yielding varieties, they would still have an appropriate proportional amount of stover that would come out of the back end of the combine.
And, I'm curious as well as to when I look at, for example, here in their plots, some of the soybeans out there, massive plants, lots of leaf area. How does the plant take that carbon? Is it through the leaf area? And if so, how come soybeans, big bushy plants, don't sequester more than corn?
Well, part of it is the stover that comes out of soybean is, meaning the crop residue after harvest, has got a much lower carbon-nitrogen ratio, so it melts down more quickly than does corn stover.
So I guess as a soil scientist, first time that I can recall, maybe having heard you make a presentation, enjoyed it greatly. And, of course, the U of I is still some of the most fantastic research plots in the world there.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed giving this interview.
Again, our thanks to Dr. Bill Simmons, Professor Emeritus at the University of Illinois.
So we'll see a lot of questions as it relates to the whole carbon sequestering, and we may just be on the fringes of that as far as really knowing what's going to take place. But again, a lot of questions and maybe more questions and answers at this point. But apparently it is going to be a trend, and I suspect, as we've said for the last year or so now, that's something we're going to hear a lot more about going down the road and figuring out cropping systems that can maximize that carbon sequestering and at least perhaps offer some economic incentives to the producers. With that, we'll wrap up this part of today's feature of Talking Agriculture with the experts from Brands.